Great to have you with us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, when it comes to adjusting for warmer weather, water, I should say, and our water is probably getting a little warmer here with climate change, some fish are kind of defying the expectations of the warmer water. And we're going to be talking about the findings of a recent study on that effect with our guest, Olaf Jensen. Olaf is an associate professor in the Department of Integrative Biology and Center of Limnology. He was part of the research team and will share some results with us. And we'll also talk about how climate change is affecting fishing in Wisconsin. Have you noticed a change in the fish that you've seen? What would you like to know about the results of the study? Love to hear from you. You can call us at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Olaf Jensen, welcome. Good to have you with me in the studio. Nice to have you here.
Thanks, Larry. Great to be here.
So researchers had certain expectations when they began their study. So tell maybe the outline of the study and kind of what you were sort of expecting.
Sure. Let me back up a little bit. So understanding the impacts of climate change is a very active area of research right now, and people are coming at that at all different angles. And a team of us, led by a graduate student at the Center for Limnology, Mary Salokas, wanted to understand the impacts of climate change on fish growth. There's this idea of global shrinking that's been proposed as one of the rules of climate change. You know, that as ecosystems get warmer, organisms get smaller, their body size shrinks. Not that individuals shrink, but over time, we end up with smaller individuals in a population. And this is an idea that's been proposed, but hasn't been widely tested. And so what we wanted to do was to look at a group of fish that's likely to be severely impacted by temperature change, salmon and trout. That family is a family of cold water fish. And so we examined about 500,000 records of fish body size from 12 species collected around the world and looked at trends over time. And what we were surprised to see is that they're not just shrinking. In fact, about two-thirds of them actually were growing, and the trend overall was toward larger fish. So we were quite surprised to see that.
So why was the initial, you know, why did people initially think, well, warmer waters are going to mean smaller fish?
Yeah, so as the water gets warmer, fish are cold-blooded, right? So they can't control their own body temperatures. It means their inside temperature gets warmer as well. And we know that as they get warmer, respiration rates go up. That's sort of like the energetic rent that they have to pay. And so the first order, guess is that their body size would go down to pay this extra rent of surviving in a warm climate.
So, and the results, I mean, across a number of fish then?
Yeah, across 12 different species in North America, Europe, and one population in Asia, what we saw is that overall, they're slowly getting larger, not smaller.
And now the data that you collected, where were those data? How were those data collected? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, a lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into collecting those data by fish biologists around the world. So some of them were by university researchers through programs like the North Temperate Lakes Long-Term Ecological Research Program here in Wisconsin. Others were collected by state agencies, so state and provincial agencies in the U.S. and Canada, through their routine monitoring of fish populations.
It's interesting. My daughter is going to be interning this summer. She's finishing her sophomore year, and we'll be doing some fish sampling, collecting for the DNR in the Oshkosh area, water sampling and fish sampling. So I've got to bring this up with her.
Fantastic. She should be careful. That's how it starts.
Well, she's a marine biology major, so there you go. So here you've got all these data from all over the world, and were the results fairly uniform or around the world? Or
they weren't uniform, but trying to understand the patterns in terms of which fish were getting larger and which populations were getting smaller. It turned out to be nearly fruitless. We examined all the explanations we could find and came up short. So you know there are papers that solve a mystery, and there are papers that add to the mystery. And ours is certainly in the latter pile there. The one thing we did see is that larger bodied fish populations tend to be getting larger at a more rapid rate.
Larger bodied fish or
populations of big fish.
Populations of big fish.
They're getting bigger faster.
So like a big salmon or a salmon, a king salmon, let's say, is probably going to get bigger, or at least that's what the research is showing, versus a rainbow trout.
Yeah, or that populations of, in this case, lake trout was one of our species, that are large, have a lot of large individuals. They tend to show positive trends in body size. They're getting bigger.
So give me the fish and the salmon and the trout that you were looking at.
Sure. So we were looking specifically at freshwater trout. Okay. So not salmon that are going out to the oceans. And their relatives. So we looked at trout. We looked at things like whitefish and cisco found here in Wisconsin. And then we looked at fish like grayling that are not a species found here in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
They used to be in Michigan, but they were extirpated quite a long time ago.
Is that right?
Those were the major groups that we looked at.
Wow. Our guest, Olaf Jensen, if you have a question for him as we talk about their research on fish size, the size of salmon and trout in particular around the world, I hope you'll join in. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us the email address ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And we're going to look at the overall, the global research that was carried out, but we'll also try and take a look at Wisconsin in more specific terms as we visit with Olaf about this. And there's some research that's even going on by the UW in Mongolia. I was surprised to see that.
That's right. Our one Asian fish population in this study that we did is a study that I did myself with a bunch of collaborators and graduate students from University of Wisconsin.
And what were you studying in Mongolia?
So the research in Mongolia got started about 2006. At that point, Jake van der Zanden, who's the director of the Center for Limnology, was starting a project on the world's largest trout. This is a species called the taimen, and they get up to 200 pounds. And so not surprisingly, a lot of anglers were very curious to get out there and try to catch one of these. The only problem is they're an endangered species.
Oh, so there's no fishing for them.
Well, there is. Mongolia has really tried to strike a balance between protection and making money from this resource that they have. There is fishing, but it's 100% catch release, and it's highly restricted in terms of the methods to make sure that they're not driving the species extinct.
I would love to. I would imagine it's an expensive process to go and get the opportunity. Maybe even a drawing or something for your name to come up to be able to go.
Yeah, so at this point, they don't have drawings. This is one that you can just go and do if you have the money. But it ends up being, I think, around $6,000 or $7,000 a week to go fishing with a guided trip. And you really do need to go with a guide to do this. And so in rural Mongolia, that's big money. Well, it's big money anywhere. But,
yeah.
So there's a real interest in maintaining the sustainability. You don't want to kill the goose that laid the golden egg.
Tom and Nina has a question for you. Let's go there. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I'm a long-term trout fisherman, and I work closely with Trout Limited all throughout the state of Wisconsin. The increase that you're talking about, is it something that's more on a population level, or is it an increase we could actually realize on an individual fish basis. So if you could kind of try to bring your research down to the individual fisherman level in Wisconsin, and that would be appreciated.
Yeah, that's a great question. So we looked at changes in the average body size of fish caught in routine surveys. So these are surveys where they try to use exactly the same method year after year. And what we found was overall an increase in that average body size.
And we'll go into more detail on that with all, if we can maybe get down to the ounces or pounds or whatever, Tom. So stay from Nina. So stay listening. Olaf Jensen is associate professor in the Department of Integrative Biology in the Center for Limnology at UW-Madison. And he's going to be with us right up until 12:30 today. And certainly you can join in and join Tom as well at 1-800-642-1234. Email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back right after this look at the news. Great to have you along here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're taking a look at the effect of climate change and the warming of water on freshwater fish. There's been some research done on it, and we're talking with one of the people involved in that research, Olaf Jensen, associate professor in the Department of Integrative Biology in the Center for Limnology, and talking about the results of a recently published study and applying some of that information to not only fish around the world, especially salmon and trout, but to zeroing in a bit on our Wisconsin fish population as well. So I hope you'll join in with your own questions. Have you noticed any changes to fish populations in your area? What questions do you have about the effect of warmer weather on lakes and streams? Number to call is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us, email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And as we broke for news, Olaf, we had Tom from Nina on, and he was, I think, asking for information at a we were talking about sort of the broad populations and sort of narrowing it down to more, well, I don't know if you can get to the individual fish, but at least the individual species.
Yeah, I think Tom had a good question about the mechanism behind this change in fish size that we've seen. And in our data, all we have is fish size. So it's tempting to infer that it's changes in growth rate, but it could also be changes in the age structure of the population. And what that means is it might be that we see fewer older individuals in some populations, and so the average size goes down. Or if recruitment, that is the successful reproduction, goes down, we see relatively more old individuals and an increase in population body size.
Yeah, so there's a lot more to consider, for sure.
There's always room for more research.
Yeah, well, Mike in Sheldon sent an email. He's wondering if you looked into correlation between larger fish size and fish conservation measures. Were the populations of fisheries so depleted in the original data that more recent conservation measures in recent years have helped to increase the size of fish also? You're wondering how far back did you look at the size of fish, and or is it more strictly due to warming?
Yeah, that's a great question. Certainly, some of our data went back to the 1950s, so we're talking about several decades of change here. And in many cases, we do have recovery of previously overfished populations. So if we look in particular on the marine side, this is not this paper, but other work, on the marine side, we've seen a whole lot of recovery of wild fish populations since about the mid-1990s, when our laws got a lot stricter. So recovery in abundance, recovery in body size. And so I think the caller is right to look at that as an explanation as well.
Yeah, I was thinking about, as a muskie fisherman, I was thinking about muskies. When I started muskie fishing a long time ago, And when you caught a muskie and it was legal, you kept it. And now, when you catch a muskie and it's legal, you release it.
Right. Yeah.
Typically, well, at least unless it's your first one or something.
That catch and release ethic has really changed over time. It's become much more common.
Yeah. Join in with your questions, 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert sent me a photo of a Taman trout, and this goes back, if you were just tuning in, there's been some work done by the UW in Mongolia on the Taman trout, which is the largest trout in the world. How big do they get?
Up to 200 pounds and about 6 feet long.
Up to 200 pounds and 6 feet long, which you're not going to find one in Lake in any of our waters here in Wisconsin, kind of unfortunately. And again, those particular fish are very there are very strict regulations about catching those fish.
That's right. It's as we were saying before, in Mongolia, it's 100% catch and release. So you're not allowed to keep any of the ones that you catch. And you can't use live bait. It's all artificials, and it's almost all fly fishing. And it's through guides, and the guides are very well trained at releasing the fish in good shape. So we see mortality rates of released fish that are in the range of 2 to 5%.
And why do we have information as to why the population of these trout has to be, you know, why the numbers are down so much?
Yeah, in Mongolia, they're in pretty good shape, but in the rest of their range, in Russia, a lot of Siberia, they were actually purposely extirpated in many rivers because the people living there valued the whitefish, which the Taiman ate. And so sort of the same way that many cultures have driven out wolves in order to protect the hunting opportunities for deer and elk, the Taiman are nicknamed the river wolf, and they were driven out of much of Siberia.
You mentioned extirpated just now, but Bill in Oregon emailed us, and earlier you used the extirpated when you're referring to graylings in Michigan, and perhaps Wisconsin. Does that term mean that they were locally extinct or that they were intentionally removed?
That's right. They're locally extinct in Michigan. The extirpation of grayling in Michigan wasn't intentional, but it was a side effect of the era when rivers were mostly highways for getting logs to market.
Okay, that makes sense. Kellen Sugar Camp has a question. Let's go there.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Has there been any research into connecting PFAS with or ongoing to a smaller size? I was wondering if PFAS, since we've been warned not to eat freshwater fish in Wisconsin because of PFAS levels, I was wondering if that could be also, influencing reproduction and such.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I think we're really still in the early stages of understanding the impacts of PFAS on aquatic ecosystems and human health, for that matter. I think it's unlikely that the changes we've seen in body size are driven in any large extent by PFAS, because we've seen increases in body size for fish populations throughout the Northern Hemisphere, including in some pretty remote areas.
So how much warmer are our lakes and rivers getting? I mean, you had to be looking at temperature shifts across the world, really.
Yeah, so bringing it back to Mongolia, because that's a real hotspot for climate warming. There, the air temperatures have increased by about 3 degrees over the last 40 years. So we're seeing a very rapid temperature increase out there. That's several times the global average. That's air temperature. Water temperatures probably following along with some delay, although we don't have as good data on the water temperatures.
But if you've got a 3 degree increase, you know the water's eventually going to be up 3 degrees as well, I would think.
Yeah, it's getting hot. And in the peak summer temperatures, what we're seeing is the rivers there are largely inhospitable for cold water fish like trout and their relatives. They have to seek out cold springs, places where groundwater is bubbling up, and basically pack in there and wait it out.
And I'm thinking about Wisconsin and our fish populations, and thinking about certain fish populations within the state that have are having trouble, and one is the walleye.
That is a huge concern right now, right? The walleye populations in Wisconsin, particularly the ones more toward the southern portion of the state, by and large are experiencing recruitment failure, which means that they were having a hard time successfully reproducing. And we're also seeing this shift toward more warm water species like bass and bluegill.
Yeah, I see a lot of former walleye lakes, and that has created controversy for sure. A bass fishermen probably like it, and the walleye fishermen do not like it at all.
That's true, and that's to the extent that those identities, bass fishermen and walleye fishermen, are fixed. People do change as well. And so some of our research has been focused on not the fish, but the anglers, trying to understand how anglers are adapting to all of this climate change as well.
So some of your research showing that those walleye fishermen are kind of switching to bass?
Absolutely. So we launched an interview questionnaire with Wisconsin anglers to ask them about their preferences for walleye, bass, and other species, and also how far they were willing to travel. And we did this with something called a choice experiment, where an angler gets a survey. It's got three options for a fishing trip, and they rank the one they like best. And what we found is that many anglers, about half, are perfectly willing to switch to other species. There are diehard walleye anglers that'll travel to the ends of the earth to get the last walleye, but they are a minority.
Let's go to Greg in Waukesha next. Greg, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was wondering about the effect of human drugs that are excreted and make their way to the sewage treatment plant, and that actually make their way into, for instance, Lake Michigan. If those have any effect on our fish populations of that lake. And I understand that one of the drugs that's very recalcitrant to degradation is metformin, the diabetes drug. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, good question. It was probably about 15 years ago that there was a really interesting study looking at the presence of estrogen from birth control pills in the water supply. Apparently, that's one of the drugs that makes its way through sewage treatment plants pretty well. And it has an effect on fish.
It does.
It does. Yeah, there were studies on fish that showed that increasingly they were finding in places that had sewage outflow, they were finding intersex fish, so fish that had characteristics of males and females. And the population level impact of that is still not well understood, and the effects on growth are not understood at all.
Wow. How much warmer are our lakes and rivers going to get, do you think?
That depends on a whole bunch of policy decisions that I think none of us are really well able to predict.
And overall, what do you think in terms of looking at Wisconsin? What's the overall effect that the warmer weather, the warmer temperatures, climate change has had on our fish populations?
Well, it's done a number of things. I mean, first of all, at the physical level, ice is forming later and coming off the lakes earlier. We know that that's a global pattern from some work that John Magnuson, a professor emeritus at the Center for Limnology, has done. And so that really changes the whole timing, because when ice comes off a lake, that sort of is the starting gun for a sequence of changes that that happen. You get an explosion in plankton growth, and then the fish hatch to eat that plankton. And so the timing of these changes, what we call phenology, is really thrown out of whack. So that's even separate from the warming water temperatures. The warming water temperatures, though, are driving a shift toward more warm water species like bass and bluegill. So if you're an angler who likes panfish or likes to fish for bass, probably a lot more opportunities coming up for that.
What about muskie? I have an investment in muskie fishing. I think I've got three tackle boxes completely full of muskie lures, among other things. So
Yeah, so muskie weren't part of our study, so we didn't look at changes in their growth rates, but they are a cool water fish species, so warming is likely to shift them farther north.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about even the Madison Lakes. There's some pretty good-sized muskie, in at least in Monona. I've never fished much for them in Mendota. I'm not even sure about the population there.
Yeah, speaking of which, for your Madison listeners, now is a great time to go down to the dam at the end of Lake Wingra and watch for muskie trying to jump over the dam. I've watched them for a long time, and I rarely see them make it, but it's great to see them try.
Yeah, I've seen, and this is by Vilas Park Zoo, of course, and I've sat there. We might have been watching at the same time together on Olaf at one point or another, because I've always often enjoyed having a home on Lake Monona, is where they're coming from, up the creek to try and get into the other lake. There are some pretty big fish.
It's great entertainment, and it's a sure sign of spring when they come back. Speaking of which, I saw the loons on Monona this past weekend, yeah. So they're back as well.
And I've seen as many, if you go up to the Monona Terrace with binoculars this time of the year and just gaze across the lake, you might see upwards of 100 loons.
Incredible.
On Lake Monona this time of year. Luke in Marshfield will give you a chance. Hi, Luke.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you guys doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Thank you very much. I just wanted to, if you guys want to see a really good show around all wildlife management and everything that goes with that, a good name is Stephen Rinella. And he does an amazing job with all of his hunts, with all of his making sure that everything is, you know. And he's an awesome person. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Steve Rinella.
Yeah.
All right, Luke. Thanks a lot. Have you watched any of his?
I haven't seen it. No.
Well, it's on the YouTube channel. So. thanks, Luke, for that information. So let's take a minute to talk about the Center for Limnology, the Department of Integrated Biology and Center for Limnology. Tell us more about it. I can remember working with John Magnuson on this show.
Oh, fantastic. Yep.
Interviewing him a long time back.
So John is the former director of the Center for Limnology, was based there at the Hassler Lab, which is right there on the lakeshore on Mendota. So just down the lakeshore path from the Union.
And we have, and the data on Lake Mendota, it's got to be among the most researched lakes in the world.
It's often called the most well-studied lake in the world, for sure. Yep.
And one of the interesting things, I think, in terms of data for them, for the lake, is the freeze-in and thaw of the ice.
I think it's over 150 years now of record for Lake Mendota.
And the change in that over time has been, it's been later to freeze up and earlier to thaw out.
We're losing ice at both ends, for sure. Yep.
And so it has a huge impact. What other research is going on there that you may or may not have been involved with?
There's a ton of research going on there right now. I think for me, some of the most exciting stuff is work being done by Hillary Dugan on the effects of salt that we put on our roads in changing the salinity of lakes around us.
So, that could have, I would guess, a huge impact. Is Mendota being studied in Monona, or are they?
Mendota and Monona and a whole bunch of lakes around the world. So there are a number of sentinel lakes where we've got really good long-term records, and Professor Dugan compiled data from many of those to look at this change and saw that salt is increasing in lakes around the world, particularly urban lakes that are near areas that are heavily salted.
Yeah, and I think Madison, at least, has is doing less?
There's definitely an effort here in Madison to minimize the use of salt and public education campaigns around it as well.
Yeah.
But you need to get the ice off as well, right?
Yeah, you do. So looking down the road, how are you carrying forward on this research that you've just finished?
Yeah, I think one of the important next steps is to understand the mechanisms behind this overall increase in fish body size that we've seen. So whether it's due to growth or whether it's due to a change in the age structure. Mm-hmm. So that's one piece of it. And then I think the other piece is to ask, what does this mean at the population level? We know that larger fish survive better and have more offspring. So a decline in body size is likely to have population level impacts. And so we've approached this question by asking for fish populations throughout the upper Midwest, how is warming impacting their productivity overall? And what we've seen is there's winners and losers, and at this point they're still roughly balanced overall, but the cold water fish species are among the biggest losers, fish like cisco.
Yeah. And walleye.
and walleye. At this point, walleye still have some winners and losers. There are some populations that are doing quite well. And a number of our river walleye populations are doing pretty well. And that's a big mystery. So we have a project right now focused on these bright spots, we call them, the places where walleye populations are proving to be remarkably resilient, and trying to understand the source of that resilience.
Oh, here in Wisconsin?
In Wisconsin, yeah.
Because there are some pretty good walleye rivers.
There are good walleye rivers, and there are still some lakes that are producing really well.
Oh, well, that is good to know. And how do people get, I've read through the research that you had. Is the paper generally available?
It is. It's available online, should be available for free download, and it's also available on my website, which you can find by going to the Center for Limnology, which is limnology.wisc.edu.
Limnology.wisc.edu. Olaf, interesting stuff. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. I really appreciate it. Maybe we can get you back.
I'd love to. Thanks very much, Larry.
Olaf Jensen, Associate Professor in the Department of Integrative Biology and the Center for Limnology at UW-Madison. There's a lot of cool research that's gone on at that place over a long time. Long time, and it's fun talking about their work. So tomorrow, it's the first Tuesday of the month, and the first Tuesday of the month we always do kind of a sports oriented show, and we're going to talk with the author of a book he's written about the times that he was bat boy for the Brewers, he worked for the Packers at the same time, and he also worked for the Milwaukee Bucks. So the luckiest guy in the world, he's, I think it's something like that's the title. And then we'll also take a look at the Brewers. Our home opener is today, and we'll talk the Brewers in the baseball season. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. I'm Larry Mueller.